I'm Van Dyke Parks, and you're listening to Radio 8 Ball with Andras Jones.
Radio 8 Ball, give us a shake. We're here in the studio, tempting fate. Putting questions to the songs, which we will randomly select. Here with the help of our friend Synchronicity. And now it's time for the Radio 8 Ball Show.
Welcome to the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer questions by picking songs at random and interpret those randomly chosen songs as the answers to the questions, like picking musical tarot cards, in a process I call consulting the pop oracle. My name is Andras Jones, and I'm releasing clips from the Radio 8 Ball event I presented at the 40th Annual Conference of the International Association for the Study of Dreams in Ashland, Oregon, last June, with musical guest Bart Davenport providing the oracle fodder for our musical divinations. Today's installment features a question from author, professor, and composer Curtis Hoffman, followed by a conversation I had with Kurt just about a year later. So the next question comes from Kurt, someone whose last name is Hoffman.
All right.
Come on up. Obviously a very popular gentleman. Come on up, Mr. Hoffman. What's your first name?
Kurt.
Kurt.
Kurt Hoffman.
Kurt. Have a seat. Have a seat, Kurt. Okay. Now, I don't think that mic's gonna pick you up just fine.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, just tell me, Kurt, why did everyone applaud you? Is it just because you're a great guy?
I'm notorious. Yeah.
Okay, we'll find out why.
Yeah.
What's your question for the Pop Oracle?
How do I organize the Joseph music?
How do you organize the Joseph music? Would you mind very briefly telling us what the Joseph music is?
I composed music from dreams, and I have been given in dreams to compose music around the biblical story of Joseph. And I've now got close to 60 dreams that go with that particular work. But the question is, how do I organize them? Because I don't have a clue.
Oh, okay. Well, Bart has the answer.
Yes,
Bart has the answer.
You have the music. You have the music. You just need to organize it.
Yeah.
You have it.
That's it.
Okay.
Sequencing, baby.
Yep.
Okay. So now.
Would you want to maybe put it all on a wheel and spin it around? Well, is that
something like?
That might work. Okay. So now to engage the Pop Oracle, you get to spin the Wheel of Eight.
Na, 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 na. Wheel of Eight.
Song number six, Naked Man.
Oh, yeah.
Naked man stood on his own two shoes. Naked man took the heat all the way back to the garden, all the way from there to eternity. So many years have passed, the nude enthusiast, who can recall his name? Naked man, seen by the city hall. Naked man, on the street.
only plan was to confound them all. They say, what a man, now that he's gone. In fact, there were no laws to stop him in his cause. He just walked away. But would the naked man agree to show his hand? If he were here today, have passed, perhaps he's free at last. Who could ever say? La 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 la. Who could ever say? Well, folks, that's the story of the naked man. That was a good one.
Okay, Kurt.
Yeah.
How do you feel like that song related to your question, how do I organize the Joseph music?
Yeah. I would like to have a recording of that to listen to.
Oh, yeah, we'll get you that.
Over and over again to give me more ideas about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
But somehow or other, being exposed up here... I liked the fact that you riffed on la. So that gives me a little bit of an idea.
Yeah, because it's sort of like...
Not do, re, or mi, but
yeah,
la.
Yeah, la.
I've been told that the ah sound is sort of like the most relaxing and sacred sound. It's Buddha, Jehovah, Shiva, you know, it's also very relaxing.
Allah.
Andras.
but it is
yeah.
The note A in a C major scale is ah.
Yeah.
Is la.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So
and it is the law.
Oh yeah, there were no laws, right?
Right.
There were no laws.
Yeah.
But then I went, la, 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 so I don't know.
Yeah.
What did you think about that as the answer to his question?
Well, I just thought, obviously, as everyone chuckled, that he should do it in the nude.
Well, that's pretty much how I dream.
Organize the songs in the nude.
Pretty much how I dream.
That's how he already does it. So carry on doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought, I kept thinking of, like, all the sort of, like, Da Vinci's David, like, the sort of geometric, the naked man, Joseph in his natural state.
After his coat has been removed.
Yeah. Yeah. And then...
Va, 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 voo.
And also there's some
la, la, la,
subtle biblical references,
Like,
all the way back to the garden.
Sure,
right.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
But the garden is...
But Joseph wasn't in the garden.
Well, but the garden is the first story in Genesis, and Joseph is the last.
Ah, all the way back.
Yeah.
So start at the beginning.
Yep. River Run.
Very good.
River Very Run.
Good. Give it up for Kurt.
That's Kurt Hoffman.
A year after what you just heard, I reached out to Kurt about discussing his reading with a little time and distance, and to play some of the Joseph music for us. I caught up with him about a week before the 41st annual conference of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, as he was
getting ready for the trip to the Netherlands.
And where am I speaking to you?
I am in Ashland, Massachusetts. So we had a lot of fun last year when people would ask us where we were from, and we say, we're from Ashland. And they'd look at us and they say, Ashland, Massachusetts.
It's like, I don't know, some sort of like a little wormhole from Oregon to Massachusetts through Ashland.
I tell you, there's history behind this, because there are about 35 states in the U.S. that have Ashlands. And the reason is that in the 1830s, Henry Clay, who was from Kentucky, who was considered the great compromiser, had put together a way of keeping the free states and the slave states from being at each other's throats. It was called the Missouri Compromise. And it forestalled the Civil War for probably 20 years. But people were so gratified by this that when new towns were founded around that time, they named them after his Kentucky plantation, which was called Ashland. And so our town was founded in 1840. I'm not sure when Ashland, Oregon was founded, but a lot of towns named themselves Ashland at that time.
After his plantation.
After his plantation, in part because he had freed his slaves.
Complicated history of ours, Kurt.
History, yep.
Yeah, Ashland. Okay. Well, that brings me to a place that I wanted to start our talk, which is a failing of mine at the show. When you referenced River Run, I was so sort of flummoxed and didn't really know how to respond. That's kind of where your reading ends, instead of ending on me sort of being like, oh, okay. And then it was also early in the show, so I was really very concerned with time, and I wasn't giving it the same kind of dig in kind of energy that I would if we were doing a podcast. So I wanted to do that now. Do you want to talk about what you meant when you said River Run, about the start at the beginning and all that?
I'm familiar with the writings of James Joyce.
Yes, yes. Although, like a lot of people, I'm familiar with the writings of James Joyce, but more through other people talking about James Joyce and through selected segments of it than as a reader of any one of his novels in total.
Anyone who has read Finnegan's Wake, and I am a dedicated waker, by the way, even though I sleep a lot, would know that this is a novel whose end is its beginning. And the first word on the first page of Finnegan's Wake is River Run. So the last sentence at the end of the book, some 700 pages later, is away alone, a love the longa, and then you come back to River Run. From Striver Shore to Bend to Bay leads us by a circuit to speak of recirculation back to Hoth Castle and environs. So the whole book is a circle and keeps getting reread and reread. And so since we were talking about the idea of the book of Genesis beginning with the naked man, Adam, and ending with the story of Joseph, who lost his cloak of many colors, I just sort of threw that in as a reference for anyone who might be familiar with the Wake. And I suspect that quite a number of the people in the audience would have been.
Oh, it seemed like it. I definitely had this sense of hearing something that I felt like I should know, and that a lot of people there did. And that was kind of the fun of the day. I'm curious, were there other in-jokes, having gone back and watched the video, were there other in-jokes that you'd like to decode for us?
Let me think about that. That was certainly one of them. I made a little gesture when the naked man came up as if I were, you know, streaking, which I don't know if you caught that.
I think that was implied. Although I am of a generation that also remembers streaking. I think, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone much younger than me would recognize the title, but the intention, I think, yeah, people would get.
Sure. Yeah. And what I had not quite recollected when we were up there was that I had had that dream about David Kahn the night before the conference.
Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, you know Alina and Catherine Bell, who are important people on IASD, and who are there in terms of getting things started and set up. So we had arrived a night before the conference began, and I had run into both of them in the halls, and then I'd gone down to registration, and there was David Kahn and his partner registering. So I had met all three of them that evening. So that night I had a dream in which Alina and Catherine and I are outside the hotel on a sort of a grassy slope. The road or the ramp to the hotel entrance is above us, and a car pulls up, and out of the driver's seat of the car emerges David Kahn, stark naked.
Huh.
Now, you met David at the conference, perhaps? I don't know. He's an older gentleman, fairly short. He's in his 90s. In the dream, I didn't quite realize that. I thought he was in his 80s, and I told Alina and Catherine in the dream, oh, don't worry about that. He's okay. He's in his 80s. That was the whole dream. But there was the naked man.
Certainly. Certainly. And he shows up again in your reading.
Yep, it did. And, of course, I told them and David about this dream. David is a great humorist himself, and he got a kick out of it.
So has the naked man shown up since then, particularly in relation to the Joseph music?
Not as such, no. I mean, what I have, you know, my wife had a career for a while as a database programmer, and she wrote me a dream database. And I can easily search on anything that has appeared in my dreams over the last 30-some-odd years and pull up all of the dream texts for that item.
And these are your dream journals?
Yes.
Got it.
And we're up close to 19,000 dreams at this point.
That's amazing that you have, one, been able to catalog that many dreams, but also just devoted yourself to that practice and then to entering it into a database.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's every morning, pretty much.
Wow, my father would be so proud if I did that. he's no longer with us, but that was his strongest advice to dreamers and those who wanted to increase their experience of dreaming was just to write it every morning. And it sounds like the practice that you've created for yourself has allowed you to develop into a really very, I don't want to say rigorous, but a very maybe clear-eyed dreamer.
I'd say dedicated would be a good descriptor. Yeah.
Since the topic was the Joseph music, I wanted to give people who wanted to go deeper down this rabbit hole in exploring the questions and the context some introduction to that we weren't really able to give it on the show. Now, I don't have any of it here, but I was thinking maybe...
But I have it all here.
Yeah, if you could maybe introduce a couple of pieces.
Some. I sent you the spreadsheet, didn't I? It's basically a little spreadsheet that shows on what notes individual pieces start. Well, I can play you a couple pieces, one piece now. Now, there's a joke associated with this, okay? Because I was given in the dream that this music goes with the entry of the Pharaoh in the story. Okay?
Yeah.
And I had the dream on February 10th. Okay?
February 10th.
Yes. And so the joke is, 2:10, come in.
Because February is the second month.
Yeah, a standard notation for February 10th is 2:10.
Okay.
So, 2:10 common.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And this is the this is the opening piece?
No, it's fairly early. Well, it's not the opening piece of the thing. It was one of the early pieces that I got, but it will be for that moment in the story when Joseph is before the Pharaoh.
Got it. And you're going to have to fill some of this in because my my biblical knowledge is also limited. Maybe the case for some of our listeners as well. So just as far as the Joseph story goes, maybe tell us what the Joseph story is.
So Joseph is the son of Jacob by his preferred wife. And Jacob favors him. His older brothers are jealous of him. Jacob has given him a coat of many colors, which he wears. And he's kind of proud of himself, and he is a champion dreamer, by the way. And he has dreams in which he sees 12 sheaves of wheat and a 13th sheaf, and 12 sheaves and 11 of the sheaves bow down before the 12th sheaf. And there are 12 sons altogether. And so his brothers rightly interpret that as meaning that he's going to rule over all of them, and they don't like that idea. And so they conspire together, and they're not going to kill him. But what they're going to do is they're going to strip him of his magical cloak by force and throw him down into a hole in the ground, where then they will sell him to some traveling merchants in slavery. And then they show the ripped up coat to Jacob and claim that he was eaten by a lion. And Jacob, of course, goes into mourning.
Wow, so, George Lucas really ripped this off for Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. But what didn't George Lucas rip off? You know, I mean, I just remember, you know, this is off the story. After Empire Strikes Back came out, and I was telling my myth and culture students, and it's going to turn out that Luke and Leia are brother and sister. And they said, no! Yes, because it was obvious to me. But anyway, okay, so Joseph is sold into slavery in Egypt. He winds up being the slave of a wealthy merchant named Potiphar. The merchant's wife takes a shine to him and invites him to bed, and he declines her offer, and she's so upset about that that she claims that he'd raped her. And this, of course, is also stolen from another Egyptian story. The case comes before the court, and while he is innocent, he cannot prove his innocence, so he's thrown in jail. And while he's in jail, he is in there with a couple of other court officials, one of whom is a butler and the other is a baker. And they have dreams, and they tell him their dreams, and he interprets the dreams for them. And one of them, I think the butler gets a good dream and the baker gets a bad dream, and these are things that happen. And word of this reaches Pharaoh. And Pharaoh himself has had some rather disturbing dreams, so he invites Joseph to interpret his dreams for him. And the dreams involve the idea that there were going to be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. And that if the Pharaoh is wise, which he is, he will store up lots of grain and lots of livestock during the good years against the famine years. And this is done. Joseph is greatly respected. He's given a position at court. He becomes a close advisor to the king. The famine comes, and the famine is widespread, not just in Egypt, but throughout the Middle East. And it is affecting Joseph's brothers and his family, They have no food, so they travel down to Egypt to see if they can get some sustenance. And Joseph, who has gotten an Egyptian name, an Egyptian wife, and has basically become an Egyptian courtier, deals with them and hides his identity for some time until it's the right time to bring it out. And then everybody fawns over him, and it's a big family happy reunion. And that's the end of the story.
For now, until George Lucas gets a hold of it, and we'll find out in installment 3.
Yep.
Okay, well, so that's the story. That's boy, I wish I had known this at the time, because that really informs so many other aspects of my interpretation of the whole show.
Yep.
That is really powerful. So, okay, so you played that one segment, and I played that for the audience to hear. Something that I noticed when I was listening to it was that it reminded me a little bit of some of the synthesizer work from Pete Townsend and The Who on what became the record Who's Next, and songs like Bob O'Reilly and Won't Get Fooled Again, but were really foundational to a more experimental piece that Pete Townsend was working on called Lifehouse that really kind of went... Oh, go on.
Genre.
Outside of your genre. Well,
yeah, so while I know The Who from back when, I don't know any of Peter Townsend's more recent work.
Well, so this is from 1969. The follow-up to Tommy, they were working on a thing called Lifehouse that was a pretty visionary work. It was about a sort of a dystopian future when, because of our bad environmental practices, we'd ravaged the lands, and most of humanity lived their lives in experience suits hooked into a thing called the grid, which is very much like our, you know, sort of a sci-fi version of what would now be like the internet, and the grids would be like virtual reality. And so these people live, most of like the rich people in the world live inside the grid, plugged into their experience suits. And out in the sort of more devastated areas, the poorer people are trying to survive out in the world. And in the midst of this, and this is the story of Lifehouse, a young programmer on the grid decides to plug in the music from this band of the poorer folks, which are played by The Who, playing this music, which he believes if everyone can tune into one note, then revolution will happen. And a very sort of 69 utopian vision of how the future could work. But it's just...
I assume you've seen Upload?
Which one is Upload? Is that the Matt Damon?
No.
No, which one's Upload?
This is a TV series on Netflix in which a scenario very much like that exists, except they upload you when you die.
Oh, yes. Yes. Sort of like a Black Mirror kind of idea.
So, only much darker than that episode of Black Mirror was.
Wow.
It's probably going to go into its fourth season this fall.
Okay. Well, I'll have to check that out. I know that Townsend and Lifehouse have had an influence on a lot of different sci-fi projects since then. But the part that I was thinking about was just musically, where the reality and the fantasy mixed in the creation of Lifehouse was that Townsend was doing all of these experiments with early synthesizers and sort of in a John Cageian kind of way, entering birth dates and stats of members of the band and then allowing the synthesizer to create a sonic palette that was based upon those coordinates. And
sort of like AI, isn't it?
Sort of like an early version. And the song that is probably most known for this is the beginning of the song Bob O'Reilly that a lot of people call Teenage Wasteland. And I'm not so familiar with this composer, but the reason the song was called Bob O'Reilly was because Pete Townsend felt like the music reminded him of the experimental musician Terry Riley. But that is also not someone that you're aware of.
Nope.
Which I think makes it even more interesting, because it sounds to me like although it's a very different thing, you are on a similar course of basing music upon coordinates that are given to you by dreams that are, don't necessarily come from another piece of music, that come from the inside of your mind, and you are then...
Well, okay, let's rephrase that.
Okay.
Because, first of all, if I get a piece of music in a dream that I recognize, I don't use it. And my musical vocabulary, at least within the genre of classical music, is very broad. So if I get something like that, I'm likely to recognize where it comes from and then not use it. That's part of the discipline here. But some of the pieces that I get have similarities to existing music, because there's only so many notes in the scale and so many ways you can put them together. But I make a careful effort to avoid using existing music unless the dream tells me to, which in rare occasions it has. So that's part of it. Secondly, I am not convinced that this is happening in my mind so much as through my mind, if you follow me.
Yes, that's sort of the way you describe it, that these songs have been given to you.
Yes.
And, well, you know, I talk in my keynote about the dream poet, and that was my dad's name for the dreaming consciousness that is ourself, but is also larger than ourself.
Yes. Yes. By the way, a bit of shameless self-promotion here. My book on this is out now.
On the Joseph music?
Not on the Joseph music. On the work that came before it. So you're familiar with the tarot, I'm pretty sure.
Very
I've
much so.
I've read your book. Yeah. I was given, as a result of something that happened at the online 2021 IASD conference, I was given the assignment to write music for each of the 78 tarot keys.
I think several people I know have been called to create our own tarots. For me, it was creating musical tarots. I have many friends who are artists who have felt called to create their own tarot based on visual images. And so,
well, I have a close friend. All right. This is a Monty Python reference for a moment.
Okay.
I have a friend in Wom. I literally have a friend who lives in Rome, or has lived in Rome, who has created her own tarot deck on the basis of her dreams. Her name is Carmen Sorrenti. It's called the Folarcos Tarot. You can find it online. It's a wonderful deck. In any event, this was part of my inspiration for doing the musical Dream Tarot. And that project is now complete. And I wrote a book about it, which is also now out, which I'll be selling at the conference.
And what's the name of that book?
The Musical Dream Tarot.
And I'll put a picture of the cover in the post about this and a link to where people can purchase it.
Just came out last month. So they kind of knew my schedule and made sure that it got out in time for me to bring it to another conference that I attended in April, and then obviously for the Dream Conference.
So now let's talk a little bit about your very, just incredibly kind offer to include Radio 8 Ball in the regional conference. Will it be held in Asheville, Massachusetts, Ashland, Massachusetts, or where?
About New York City.
Oh, in New York City.
Yes, and I want to make very clear that at this point we are in the developmental stages, so nothing is firm.
Got it. Well,
we don't even know yet what the structure of the conference will be, but it's an IASD regional. And it will be in the fall of 2025, either on a Saturday, either in late September or early October. That it will be in New York City. That's as much as we've got. there are some suggestions. There's a woman, Tara O'Grady. I don't know if you met her.
Yeah, she was. She asked a question. She asked a question during the show.
Right. Anyway, Tara has connections to the musical scene there. She's also a Dream musician. To a location called the Dream Hotel in New York City, which has a kind of a venue where people can gather and there can be sort of impromptu performances. And one of the possibilities would be to have that as an informal drop-in session on the Friday night before the conference, for not just for the people attending the conference or anybody else who might happen to be there. And then have the regular conference all day on the Saturday. So it just occurred to me, this might be a venue to do the Radio 8 Ball piece. And, you know, I'm just sort of tossing it out there as one among a number of other possible suggestions.
Well, I would love to do it. And the idea that... I'm very much with Radio 8 Ball now, it's very much sort of a synchronistic spirit walk kind of thing. And the idea that the next iteration of Radio 8 Ball after the last one in Ashland could, you know, be initiated by one of the people who asked the questions and then curated musically to some degree by another person who asked the questions in Tara. That gets my synchronistic Spidey sense just tingling like crazy. So I'm very, very interested in this. And if we're talking about October of 2025, that's like a year and a half away, which gives us plenty of time.
So exactly.
That sounds exciting. Let's see. Well, then I think that it's probably something that's best discussed after the next conference. I will not be there. Unfortunately, but I'm releasing all of the episodes of like video wise, releasing the video and releasing a lot of social media posts featuring clips from the show in concert with the conference in the hope that it will generate conversations out there. So I think that I think this conversation will probably make a lot more sense. Once those conversations have taken place, it's almost like that's my dream telepathy target.
And Tara and I are already arranging to meet for lunch one of the days in the conference to talk about this stuff.
Well, that's great. Well, okay, so this is exactly what I wanted to come out of these conversations. I'll tell you for myself, I feel so much more grounded about your reading. Mm-hmm. I've felt very... I kind of ungrounded about a lot of the readings that came early in the show. Mm-hmm. I felt like we got some of the most powerful readings, but we weren't really attuned. We hadn't, like, the medicine hadn't quite kicked in yet. So being able to talk with you after and get your reflections and deepen the context of it just makes it sit so much stronger for me. And I hope that'll be the case for people who listen.
Yeah. Well, it certainly did. It took a bit of dream work to get it to that point. But, you know, most of us there in IASD are used to doing that sort of thing.
It's kind of your favorite thing to do.
It's one of them, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Like a deal.
Excellent.
What have you been doing, by the way?
I've been doing great. I just, the record that I talked about finishing is released now. We released three singles and then put out the record. And there's been, you know, it's so hard to tell the way the music business works, if it's making an impact in a grand scale. But a couple of the videos got a lot of views, like 200,000 views. And I have been invited to play a few more shows. And that's kind of was the goal, is just by putting it out that I would get invited to play it more and better venues. You were at the initiating gig at Oberon's.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There's been a lot of the synchronicity around finishing this project has not, like, it's been, there have been definitely, as the host of Radio 8 Ball, I find that in the last, I don't know, four or five times that I've done it, each time there have been these sort of unforeseen dramatic flare-ups that feel like more like something out of a psychodrama. You know, in the, are you familiar with psychodrama in the traditional sense? Like that it's using dramatic, like playing out dramatic scenes in a therapeutic setting so as to replay old traumas and make them, you know, manageable. Mm-hmm. I find that I end up being drawn into or sort of projected upon in those kind of ways. And it leads me to have to do some really, really profound and difficult personal work each time I do one of these shows. So yeah, that has been the case. But the reason I love this format is because, who knows, I might have had to go through all that rigorous personal work anyway, but I wouldn't have beautiful songs and the reflections of other people. You know, like when you told the Joseph story, I was just like, oh, there are parts of this that I really relate to. And I just also love, I was so ignorant of the Joseph. This is how dumb I am about biblical stuff. I really thought when you were talking about Joseph that you were talking about Joseph in the Mary and Joseph story.
Well, he was a pretty powerful dreamer, too.
Yeah, but a totally different guy.
It's
so I'm glad that I didn't say too much during the show, because I think I would have just derailed us and sent people down the wrong rabbit hole.
The patron saint of cuckolds, you know.
Yes. which, by the way, you know, between you and me, I find that to be one of the most troubling modern linguistic movements, calling people cucks or whatever. Like,
yeah,
it is such a strange way to define a man by the level of his wife's sexual freedom. It's very problematic to me,
but especially in the Middle East to this day is still an issue.
You know, if you're a good cuckold, you're probably a good man. It's what I think.
Yes.
Forgiving. Yeah. When it goes back to Pete Townsend, who his first rock opera was one called A Quick One While He's Away, that's all about a guy who's at war and his wife is waiting at home and she has an affair with Ivor, the engine driver. And then the soldier comes home and realizes what happened. And it ends on this grand, you are forgiven, 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 forgiven. I was like, okay.
Do you know Schoenberg's Verklärte Nacht?
No.
Okay. You know who Schoenberg was?
Yes.
Okay. One of his early works, one of the more listenable ones, is a tone poem called Verklärte Nacht, or Transfigured Night. And that's the plot line of it.
Oh, Pete. Just like George Lucas.
Uh-huh.
Well, you're proving it. If you are well educated in history, if you really know your history, you can predict the future.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I'll just tell you a little episode of that. There is in the Old Testament a conflict or a competition between the king of Israel, the first king of Israel, Saul, and David, who will assume the throne after Saul's death. And they are rivals. And it is said of them, the word on the street is, Saul has slain his thousands, and David has slain his tens of thousands. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, we just translate to the modern day, and Hamas has slain their thousands, and Netanyahu has slain his tens of thousands. And here's the kicker. Do you know where this slaying took place? Want to take a wild guess?
In the land currently known as Palestine?
More specifically than that, in Gaza.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, Marx wrote that history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes.
Which can often seem like a repetition.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Well, I think that's a perfect place to bring our conversation for the podcast to a close. But would you be cool sharing one more piece of music that we could play on the outro?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Tell us what it is first.
This is a piece that I got in August of last year called The Song of the Sea. And I'm going to be featuring this at the conference, but here it is.
I'd like to thank Curtis Hoffman for taking the time to talk with me, and I'd like to thank you for taking the time to listen to it. If you're just discovering Radio 8 Ball, I encourage you to visit www.radio8ball.com to find over 600 podcast episodes with guests like John C. Reilly, Lily Gladstone, Alan Toussaint, and Viggo Mortensen, and a link to the Radio 8 Ball app, which allows you to host your own Radio 8 Ball show for yourself and your friends. Next week, I'll be releasing the next question from the event in Ashland, and until then, I've been your host, Andras Jones, wishing you lots of spine-tingling synchronicities, connections with the natural world, and all the inspiration you can handle.